The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Oh, he's a bad man. Hey, a report from Green Bay on the way. And even though the Packers have the likely MVP, there's a weakness they got away with last week that could be exposed by the Bucs this week. We give you all the details. Welcome to NFL Live. That's Dan Orlovsky. You see Mina Kimes. You see Marcus Spears. Let's get right to our top story. Patrick Mahomes in concussion protocol after suffering an injury against the Browns. We're now 5 days away from the AFC Championship game featuring the Chiefs and Bills. All eyes on Mahomes and that availability. So Adam Schefter with us as well. What's the latest, Adam, on Mahomes' status?
Laura, I'm told that Patrick Mahomes made some positive steps, some real good steps on Monday, but he remains in concussion protocol today. Now he is expected to practice tomorrow, barring any setbacks. He still needs to go through the league's protocols and the various five-step process to get clear to play in Sunday's conference championship game against the Buffalo Bills. And I think there's hope and there's optimism he will get there, but he is not there right now. Additionally, he is dealing with a foot injury. So there are a couple of issues here to monitor with Patrick Mahomes. And I don't think very many people think he won't play. That seems, again, a long shot, but he is in the concussion protocol and that foot is injured, and they both bear watching this week.
Yeah, the foot is a really good point as well. A reminder of all the steps, by the way, that Mahomes has to go through to get back on the field. The NFL's return to participation protocol looks like this. Players must pass the following five steps, starting with light stretching and balance training. The player can then graduate to aerobic exercise, but must pass neurological and balance tests before moving on to step three. Once a player has cleared all five steps through the team, he must still be separately cleared by an independent neurological consultant that is not affiliated with an NFL team. Keep an eye on that. Just how important is Patrick Mahomes' status for the Chiefs? You see the numbers right there. According to ESPN's Football Power Index, Kansas City with a 61% chance to win the AFC Championship if they have Mahomes, if Chad Henne gets the start, that number drops to just 32%. So, Mina, all the talk certainly about where Mahomes is in the concussion protocol. You just heard what Adam had to say about that. You have other concerns, though, about his health, and it has to do with the foot injury.
Yeah, I got to think the Bills are keeping a close eye on that, whether he's practicing, because Patrick Mahomes will kill you whether he's inside the pocket or outside of it, but it's undeniable that his mobility is a huge part of his game. We saw that last year when he returned from the ankle injury. His production did suffer, in part because it was easier for defenses to play man coverage against him without the fear of him taking off or extending plays. Now, the assumption right now is that the Bills' defense will play Mahomes similarly to how they played him earlier in the season. A lot of soft zone, very little blitzing. But I wouldn't be surprised if Leslie Frazier tests that mobility early on. You might see him dial up the heat a bit more than expected just to see, hey, how mobile is this guy really? And do we have to play zone the entire game?
Yeah, I want to take it from there. So let's play the game that he passes protocol and starts to practice tomorrow. Because Mina's point is spot on that you pay attention to what's going on in Kansas City if you're Buffalo. Passes protocol and he's going to practice tomorrow. Then I do think you play a similar scheme that you did in week six where Mina talked about that soft zone, make him work the ball downfield and be patient. Now let's say that they pay attention. He doesn't get on the practice field till Friday, whether it's protocol from the concussion or the toe. I absolutely think Leslie Frazier and that defense is like, we're going to light him up. And if I was Buffalo, I'd light him off his left side. If you're a quarterback and you get pressure off your left, your natural instinct is to put your foot in the ground and push off going to your right. Test that toe to see how mobile it's going to be, to see how reactive it's going to be. I've done this toe twice. I could be candid. It stinks. The pain of it is absolutely awful. I'll play a little doctor here as well. Took me 17 years to graduate from UConn. The two things that they'll do or try to do to minimize it for Patrick is they'll take his cleat, probably go a size bigger, and they'll put a steel plate in it to restrict the bending of the toe. That's what turf toe does. It hurts when you bend your toe. So stick a metal plate in there to restrict that, and then also tape it and shoot it. That will get him through the game. He'll be able to function. But I do think that practicing tomorrow is a great sign, both for the concussion and for the toe, that he's doing well.
He was obviously laboring with that foot in the game on over the weekend. Marcus, let's go to the other side of the ball. Kind of feels like shades of last season with this Kansas City defense really getting hot at the right time.
Yeah, first of all, let me address something before I get into my analysis. Number one, Mina Kimes, you see how Lord Rutledge and Dan did us by putting suit jackets on today? But I guess since we not in Bristol, they can do what they want to do. Y'all do look good.
What is the pattern on your shirt?
Memo saying we all go wear suit jackets.
What's the pattern?
This is like bone.
Nice oatmeal.
Like
bone.
It's
bone.
You know.
Yeah, bone or oatmeal, same thing.
It's a fly. It's such a fly situation. The second thing is, okay, let me address something y'all said. Leslie Frazier better not be thinking about that damn toe, because that arm is the problem, right? I like the mobility. I get all of that. I understand what it does for his game. But you better make sure somebody covering them aminos they got running down the field with that gunslinger in the back. All right, let me get the defense. Spags, great job, man. Phenomenal. Phenomenal job by this Kansas City Chiefs defense, right? What, like Mina talked about something yesterday that piqued my interest more than anything. The stars for the Kansas City Chiefs showed up.
Yeah.
But isn't that always the case? Like, that's why this team finds themselves in these situations. The biggest star on that defense is Tyrann Mathieu.
Yep.
Because he causes the most problems for opposing offensive coordinators when they're trying to figure out where will he be. I love Frank Clark. I like the way Chris Jones rushes in the middle of that field. But you have to know and have a beat on where 32 is at all times.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, Spags gives him the freedom to roam.
Mm-hmm.
Yo, you can go back and look at the Honey Badger at LSU. He did the same thing. This dude has been doing the same thing in defenses because they acknowledge his talent and they know he can take the ball away.
Yeah, he reminds me, and this is, these are big words, Marcus, but he reminds me a little bit of Ed Reed, where like, you can't trust where he is on the football field. You can't trust that when he's in the wrong spot, you can burn him because he's there for a reason. And then, like, when they put him in the middle of the field in that Tampa 2 defense with two safeties wide and they drop him down from the top, the reactions, the instincts, the vision that he gets to play with, it completely transforms their defense. You got to know where he is every single snap.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Let's roll through some quick reads of teams eliminated now from the postseason. Adam Schefter, what do we know about Michael Thomas's health?
Well, Michael Thomas is expected to need surgeries on his ankle that he injured earlier this season. Was on IR, came back. Obviously, not fully right. Will enough to play Sunday, will enough to contribute, didn't catch a pass, but it looks like he's going to have that ankle repaired this offseason, and I'm told he is expected to be ready for the offseason program if and when that surgery happens.
Marcus, speaking of the Saints, what's their number one priority this offseason?
Listen, let's stay on it. Drew Brees probably walking away from the game. Jameis Winston, Taysom Hill is already on their roster. We know Sean Payton is a QB guru and can develop guys within this offense and create high, prolific offense. That's why I say go get Deshaun Watson. Why not? Go try to exhaust that. The Saints are in win-now mode. They have a nice roster. I know the cap and all of that situation. Fix it. Find the money. Go try to get Deshaun Watson.
Hey, just throw that out there. All right, Mina, finish the sentence. The Ravens need to
fix their passing attack. That entails a few things. Lamar Jackson, Greg Roman, need to put their heads together this offseason and focus on that. But they also need to add to the wide receiver group and the interior offensive line. Both of those holes showed up in a big way down the stretch.
Dan, the biggest question in Cleveland this offseason.
What are they going to do with Odell Beckham Jr.? This is a team that, after he went down, won 10 games. And Baker Mayfield in this offense clearly played better without him on the field. He's due over $15 million next season. They're only 2 years away from having to give up a first-round pick to go get him. Are they going to keep him and pay him that money, or are they going to use him as a trade chip, get another pick to supplement that defense and improve their football team? This is the biggest question moving forward for Cleveland. What are they going to do with OBJ?
Rams have also started their offseason after losing to the Packers, and Jared Goff's NFL career already has seen its fair share of ups and downs. Over the last four seasons, Goff has racked up 42 regular season wins, second most in the league, trailing only Tom Brady. So that's the good. On the flip side of that, he's committed 65 turnovers over that same span, the second most of any player behind only Jameis Winston. Now he's entering the first year of the four-year extension he signed back in 2019, slated to account for a $34 million cap hit next season. Rams head coach Sean McVay talking about his future.
Yeah, just like I said, everything's being evaluated. I'm not ready to make any sort of statements with regards to anybody, you know, starting position or not. We're going to have a level of competition at everything that we do. And so that's where we're at. And I think, you know, being able to take a step back, catch our breath and evaluate everything as we move forward and try to be at our best. What I'm evaluating is everything that we do. That includes the quarterback position, but that includes everything.
So again, McVay was asked, what about Jared Goff going forward? And that was what he said. Not exactly a ringing endorsement, Adam.
Well, the fact that he didn't commit to Jared Goff tells you all you need to know. It means that they're not committing to him going into the offseason. And we have one more quarterback question mark in a season filled with quarterback question marks across the league. The Rams situation clearly will be one to monitor because we don't know whether Jared Goff will be back, whether he won't be back. He's actually entering what would be the first year of the extension that he signed. It would be the new years on that extension. But the Rams went to John Wolford when Jared Goff was not fully recovered from that thumb surgery. And Sean McVay sounded, at best, non-committal there. So if you're not committing to a quarterback, what does that tell you? You don't hear Joe Judge saying that in New York about Daniel Jones. You don't hear people saying that in other cities about their quarterbacks. There's a question. He didn't say Jared Goff is our quarterback. Did not say that, right? So everybody can see what happens now this offseason.
Yeah, it leaves it up to a lot of interpretation. And Dan, when you think about this, why do you think that Sean McVay wouldn't just come out and say, yeah, Jared Goff is our guy?
Okay, so as a quarterback, Jared Goff does a couple things really well. Ball placement accuracy is outstanding. The different tempos and trajectories that he puts on the ball are great. And you guys have heard me say that there's two kinds of quarterbacks in the NFL. There's the creators and there's the executors. Now, when you're a creator, I'm talking Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers and Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. Like, you can go above the X's and O's. You make these splash plays. You're so explosive. You can deal with a couple turnovers because you're going to make up for them. Now, Jared Goff is not the creator. He's the executor. So when you're an executor and you're going to play to the rhythm of the offense, you're going to play within the structure of the offense, you can't turn the ball over because you don't create those splash plays. And I think that's what Sean McVay is talking about, that stretch this year where Jared really struggled with the turnovers. You're not going above the X's and O's and creating enough offense for us at that position to have that level of turnovers. 2017 to 2018, we're talking 60 touchdowns and 19 picks. That's with the outside zone run game and the boot play action off of it, right? In the last 2 years, we're talking 42 touchdowns and 29 picks. If Jared Goff is going to continue to be an executor, then the turnovers, the giveaways, and the silly mistakes have to go away for him in this offense.
We have come a long way from Sean McVay getting angry when people would call Jared Goff a system quarterback. I don't know if you guys remember that. His tune seems to have changed. Everything Dan said is right. Jared Goff's struggles have coincided with the Rams moving a bit away from that consistent outside zone game all the time. But the reason they went away from it is because, well, there were a couple reasons. One, the offensive line is not as dominant as they were in 2018. But also defenses got better at playing it, right? Yeah. Committing more defensive linemen to stop that outside zone driven attack. Everything
kind
of stemmed from what they did in the run game. Sean McVay evolved, but it feels like Jared Goff didn't evolve with him, and that's why you see this frustration seeping through. Look, I don't think he's going anywhere financially. It doesn't make sense to trade him, but I did think it was telling that when Sean McVay had the chance, he had Goff as the backup, and yet didn't think he was so injured as to require another backup on the roster. You can't tell me that doesn't mean something.
Yeah.
Well, y'all know it gets serious when I bring paperwork. Uh-oh. I got paperwork today.
Okay.
Shout
out
boy.
To my man, right. Buddy.
He's got
I'm
papers.
Ready.
I gotta
I'm put ready this paperwork. As well.
Listen, it's notable Rams cap hits for 2021. Jared Goff, this paperwork right here. Jared Goff, $34.3 million, accounts for 17% of the cap, almost 18. Aaron Donald, I'd say he's played worth his contract. Jalen Ramsey, I'd say he's played worth his contract. My point is this, all right, and Mina hit on it a little bit. If you were able to play as a $100 million quarterback, you should have played in the playoff game. I don't think we raised enough eyebrows about that. That was too small of a story for me to contain when you got a guy that's supposed to be the future of your franchise that you've already paid healthy enough to go because he went in the game but didn't start. Mind-boggling. Y'all know me. I read things for what they are as I see them. The second part of that is if you're going to have three guys accounting for 44% of your cap, them three guys better be playing at the highest damn level they can play. And those other two are two of the best at their position. Number one, 1-1 as the D-tackle and the cornerback, Jalen Ramsey. Jared Goff has to raise his level of play or he'll be out of L.A. and we won't be talking about Sean McVay and Jared Goff. We'll be talking about Sean McVay and some guy that Sean McVay thinks can run this offense at a high clip.
You're lucky we got a good commercial.
Yeah, you're lucky paperwork. That, yeah, he brought paperwork, Dan. Dan always brings paperwork, so it's no different for him.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And then there were four. The Packers, Bucks, Bills, and Chiefs. The final teams remaining for a shot at the Super Bowl. And Aaron Rodgers has been on fire, which is really scary for anyone trying to beat him. This week, the Bucs and Tom Brady, of course, have that task. Against the Rams, Rodgers had 296 yards, a couple touchdowns, and ensured that he'd play an NFC championship game at home for the first time in his career. So for more, let's bring in our Packers reporter, Rob Domofsky. Rob, there was a lot of people questioning the fact that Green Bay took a QB in the first round of the draft and didn't get Rodgers another weapon. So how do the Packers feel about that decision now?
Well, Laura, Packers general manager Brian Gutekunst will probably never say it, but I bet he's thinking, I told you so. Remember, it was Gutekunst who before, during, and after the draft said, we believe in our receivers, and we believe in the jump that our offense will make in year two under coach Matt LaFleur. Now, it is worth noting that he did explore trade options at the November deadline, talking to the Texans about receiver Will Fuller. But at that time, Alan Lazard was still recovering from core muscle surgery, and Davante Adams was dealing with a hamstring issue. But did you see what happened after Lazard caught the touchdown pass from Aaron Rodgers on Saturday against the Rams? Rodgers walked over to Lazard and pretended to put a crown on top of his head. It's funny because a couple weeks earlier, Lazard had found an actual crown and had given it to Davante Adams, proclaiming him the king of the receivers. But Lazard said after the game for Rodgers to do that, it just showed, quote, the trust and the faith that he has in me. And it goes back to the trust and faith that Gutekunst had in this receiving core as a whole. Now, I'm sure we'll see many people projecting that the Packers still need another receiver. In fact, our own Todd McShay in his most recent mock draft has the Packers taking, you guessed it, a receiver. But for now, and heading into the NFC Championship game, they feel just fine about the group they have catching passes from Aaron Rodgers. Laura?
Rob, I love that there are just crowns hanging around the sideline there for the Packers. And Marcus, listen, we were guilty of talking about this Packers offense saying they should have added a weapon.
Oh,
why
boy.
Are you making that face when you think about this Packers offense?
Because I got to cash some checks today, Els. Everybody just move out the way and let me handle my two Uh-oh. Counterparts, the analysts. We picked quarterbacks over 30-something. Mina took Drew Brees, who she came around on. Dan took Tom Brady. Tom Brady's had a phenomenal season. I took Aaron Rodgers last year. Let me ask Dan and Mina a question. Can I ask them a question? Can I go host mode right now?
Do it. I give you permission.
What was the last game the Green Bay Packers played in last year?
It was a championship game.
You talking about the NFC Championship?
One of y'all. Speak up now. Don't hold your peace now. Speak up. I was trying to tell y'all that these people were fine.
Okay.
They had 12. Everybody talking about the season was bad. It was a down. Go ahead. Oh, go ahead, Mina. What's up?
I just lifted my crown.
And we'll put it on you.
I'm putting on that bald head.
Man, I really wish your hands were in his screen. We got to work on that.
I accept it. No, on a serious note, though, y'all, like, this is not only more familiarity with Matt LaFleur, obviously. Not only Aaron Rodgers has talked about his psychological part of it, like having more fun, being more into the game and enjoying the game with his guys. You seeing all of that come to play, but I thought this team was fine. All right, that's the point. I thought that this team was fine with what they did in the draft. I felt like they knew something we didn't know about this receiving core, which has come to fruition. But 12 makes this thing go. And last year, to talk about it's a down season, I don't know where Aaron Rodgers is. Mm. Aaron Rodgers threw 4 picks last year. He just didn't throw 50 touchdowns. No. He was the reason they won a lot of games. I'm going to leave it at that. 12 plays for the Green Bay Packers, so they always got a chance.
Well, I'll say, and I think Rodgers would agree with me, 12 and the offensive line, which is fantastic. Mm. And when I was watching the Rams game, Marcus, I was very curious, okay, against this dominant Rams defense, how is this offensive line, arguably the best in the NFL, going to play after losing the best left tackle, in my opinion, in football, in David Bakhtiari? And the answer was they were phenomenal. I mean, the interior of the line, Lindsley and Jenkins, they're absolutely dominant. And Billy Turner, who spelled Bakhtiari, he's been good too. But upon rewatching the game, Aaron Donald was so diminished. I'm not sure that I can go into this Bucks-Packers matchup and say the offensive line isn't a concern. I still expect the Packers' offense to thrive, but the Bucks' pass rush is what was the problem the last time these two teams met, and it's going to be, in my opinion, the matchup that decides this game.
It's an important point. Let's get back to Alan Lazard, though. He had 4 receptions for 96 yards. And, of course, the touchdown that we're all talking about. You're seeing it right here. Look how calm and comfortable Aaron Rodgers looked in the pocket there. You might have noticed that. Earlier today, Rodgers on the Pat McAfee show talking about how exactly this play unfolded.
Mm.
I was reminding Alan that he was bluffing off of the safety before he ran his route. So the whole route is looking like the run. That's what we do so well. We match up the run with the pass. So he was running in there looking like he was blocking the safety. The corner slept off slightly, took his eyes in the backfield. And by that time, Allen was running by him, and he made a great catch to kind of put that thing away. But I wasn't calling my shot or anything.
Allen, we're running go route.
Yeah, it wasn't a go route either.
This is absolutely outstanding by Matt LaFleur of being a great play caller. Feel, give you the clues, the crumbs, right when you take it, we end the game. That's exactly what Tampa Bay is going to have to deal with this weekend.
Take the cheese or take the soul. I think they're kind of similar, at least if you ask me.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Let's get Adam Schefter back in here. There are still 2 head coaching jobs available. What's the latest, Adam, with those openings in Philly and in Houston?
Well, in Philadelphia, they spoke to Todd Bowles, the Buccaneers defensive coordinator, yesterday. They're speaking to the Colts offensive coordinator, Nick Sirianni, today. They're planning to speak to Dennis Allen, the Saints defensive coordinator, tomorrow. And, of course, Josh McDaniels, the Patriots offensive coordinator, still in play amongst other coaches out there. As for the Houston Texans, they've announced that they've interviewed Eric Bieniemy, Leslie Frazier, the Buffalo Bills defensive coordinator. So Leslie Frazier, Eric Bieniemy squaring off on Sunday in the conference championship game. Their units against each other, both in play for the Houston Texans job right now, Laura.
And to date, Adam, none of the five NFL head coach openings have been filled by a minority candidate, a fact that has not gone unnoticed by the Fritz Pollard Alliance, a foundation that champions diversity in the NFL. Executive director of the Fritz Pollard Alliance, Rod Graves, released a statement today that read in part, "There are many outstanding black men and women of color in the NFL. The pipeline is as strong as it's ever been. The issue is not the sufficiency of the numbers. The problem is the limited number of leadership opportunities given. The disparity in opportunities is mind-boggling. It is unfortunate that the performance of coordinators like Eric Bieniemy, Todd Bowles, Byron Leftwich, Leslie Frazier, and Joe Woods may not meet what appears as ever-evolving standards for becoming a black head coach in the NFL. Adam, we start with you here. What's been the reaction around the league to the lack of minority hirings?
Well, I think it's disturbing. I think it's disappointing. I think it's embarrassing. You take a look at the list this year. There have been five head coaches hired so far. No black head coaches. If we go back, Laura, over the last four seasons, there have been only two black head coaches hired. Brian Flores, Steve Wilks, who eventually was fired out in Arizona. Look at all the men who have lost their jobs. Anthony Lynn, Hugh Jackson, Marvin Lewis, Todd Bowles, Vance Joseph, Steve Wilks again, Jim Caldwell. But the lack of people landing these jobs is noticeable. And I think what's disappointing about it is that the league supposedly put an emphasis on it over the last year, incentivized teams to go hire minority head coaching candidates. And even then, it still didn't get done. So there's clearly an issue that the league has not figured out how to address. And I think it just goes beyond so many simple things that the league thinks it can fix.
Shefty, to your point, we don't need to ask. We know the issue. Like, I'm tired of people asking us on television to explain why. I get Twitter messages and Instagram, why aren't black coaches getting hired? You need to get on TV and say these guys need to get hired. Direct that energy to the guys that do the hiring, to the dudes that hire. Like, this is about 32 owners, 31 owners in the NFL. That's what this is about. Like, they make the decision. And then we get on television every year around this same time, hiring cycle, coaches get fired, coaches get hired. And we have the same exact conversation. This feels all too familiar from last year to me. This feels familiar from the year before that, talking about the NFL. Like, the questions, what we can do. Nothing. These owners are the ones that have to make these hires. The guys that are in position to make this decision. And then there's another thing, like the now what I'm mad about, what makes me angry, what pisses me off is that these coaches are qualified. We ain't saying hire them because they black and you need to meet a quota. We ain't saying hire them because you feel bad. It's not a number of coaches being hired of minority descent, African-American coaches, black head coaches. That ain't why we mad. We mad because they qualified and they get passed over for their white counterparts that don't have the same resume. That's the issue. So until the owners' feet are held to the fire or they have to answer for why these guys aren't being hired as head coaches, stop damn asking me. And I can't get Eric Bieniemy hired. All I can tell people is Eric Bieniemy does a phenomenal job because the people that work with him every day are the ones I talk to, and they say he's as ready to be a head coach as anybody else. Now, look at his track record and see if he deserves to be a head coach. That answer is yes, too.
I've been writing about this issue for quite some time. I remember when I was a reporter at ESPN doing a piece on a study that showed that white assistants were more likely to get promoted in the NFL at all levels, regardless of their background or all things equal to their black peers. That was 5 years ago, and there are fewer black head coaches in the league now than there were then. And in that time, I've heard just about every reason possible. I mean, and then every reason has been debunked. First, it was, well, we want quarterback guys and offensive gurus. Then you'd see special teams coaches or other assistants hired. We want NFL experience. You'd see white college coaches hired. Well, his interviews aren't good, and it's a bad culture fit, even though these coaches would be recommended by the highest regarded players. He's got baggage. This cycle, we saw a head coach hired in Jacksonville who was involved in a scandal 2 years ago. I mean, the goalposts on this issue have been moved so many times, they're outside of the damn stadium. And the NFL can do whatever they want to try to compel these owners to change their mind, but they can't change their hearts and their biases. And all we can do is call a spade a spade. Yeah. This is on ownership, as Marcus has said, and we need to continue to hold ownership's feet to the fire.
Mm. Listen, I apologize. I wrote my thoughts down on a piece of paper because I want to make sure that I got them right, because I'm aware, like, I'm a white guy talking about this right now that played in the NFL for 12 years, and my favorite coach and my best coach is a black coach. Okay, so I wanted to make sure I expressed myself the right way. I couldn't imagine what it feels like to work for years and years and years for something that, one, is a passion of mine, but then, two, is the optimal way for me to support my family. And that support really levels off the starting point for my kids, only to know that the work doesn't matter. The results don't matter. The character and how I do it doesn't matter. Now, because me, Dan Orlovsky, personally, I knew long ago, and I experienced it, and I still do now, that if I, the white guy, work really hard and have really good results, and the character that I do it in is at the highest level, I'm going to climb. I will elevate. That's not right. That's not okay. And so it's not just what's the answer. Like, this is the NFL. This is our NFL. This is our NFL. We all have a hand in this. We all have to hold the owners accountable to make sure that the internal thought process that the black and the minority head coaching candidates have no longer is a reality for them.
Adam, I'll give you the final word.
Well, again, everybody summed it up incredibly well. We're looking for answers when there aren't any. The facts are the facts. The hiring record is disgraceful. There's not much more to say than that.
I'll say this as well. I really hope that next year we're talking about a different situation. We can at least try to maintain that optimism, but an important conversation here today on NFL Live.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh, man, we love Bills Mafia on this show. Here's the thing. For the majority of the season, the Bills' defense actually was considered a weakness, ranking 20th or worst in points per game, efficiency, and third down conversion percentage from weeks 1 through 11. But since week 12, defensive coordinator Leslie Frazier has this unit playing at a whole other level. Over that span, Buffalo's defense ranks 2nd in points per game, 3rd in efficiency, and 6th in third down conversion percentage. Clearly, the Bills' defense playing its best football at the most important time, and they are a unit that's really confident as well. Marcus, the Bills held the Ravens to just 3 points on Saturday. What did you see on the tape in this Bills defense? Yeah, he did pick the Ravens. Anyway, go ahead, Marcus.
Speaking of coaches, Leslie Frazier, shout out to you and what this defense did, man. First of all, the arrogance in which they played with was probably the most impressive thing. They were sending corners on blitzes. They were sending safeties. They played with great, great integrity in the front seven. Yeah. They did a tremendous job just holding fort for four quarters. The issue that the Ravens give you is that they are going to continue to attack. And eventually, what we've seen over the past 2 months, month and a half, is that people eventually break and they give up the explosive play. Just like the interception with Taron Johnson. Everybody knew Mark Andrews was getting the ball. You don't think Leslie Frazier knew that? We've been seeing it all season long. Mm-hmm. They don't have any receivers that can win these matchups in close quarters. They don't technically have a 50-50 guy outside of Mark Andrews trying to make those plays. Huntley tried to go to Andrews to score a touchdown. He was quadruple covered. So everybody knows that. But shout out to the Bills D. They gave up 3 points to the Ravens, y'all. Yes. I did not see that coming. I picked the Ravens because I thought the run game would take over. They did a phenomenal job.
Yeah, it was really sweet. When you talk about the blitzes, like if you think of the run game for Baltimore, it's been about getting the ball to the perimeter. Well, Leslie Frazier said, okay, we're just going to go blitz from the perimeter and then take the linebackers who usually blitz, and they go play the perimeter.
Klein was huge in this game, but how about Jerry Hughes? I don't know why we'd ever talk about him or people don't generally. Maybe it's because his name is Jerry. I don't know. But to use Marcus Spears' parlance, he was an aminal, okay, in this Ravens game.
Aminal.
He was the best player on the field at times. I want to talk about what impressed me the most about the Bills' defense, which was their eye discipline. The first drive, I thought the Ravens were going to kill them because they were doing what they've been doing to defenses the entire back half of the season, which is just confusing the heck out of them with misdirection. And all of a sudden, they tightened up. I mean, look at this, the stats off the zone read. Wow. The Ravens sliced and diced their way through Tennessee because they had no idea who had the ball. The Bills held them to 2.5 yards per carry on zone reads. That's eyes. I mean, it's amazing. It's a testament to Leslie Frazier and how well prepared they were for the Ravens' run game and what they've been doing over the last few weeks. None of it's going to apply next week when they play Kansas City, but they put together a hell of a game plan for this one.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, guys, because I did the Monday Night Football game, the Patriots and the Bills, and in talking to Leslie Frazier before that one even, they were kind of taking it personally that everybody was talking about the offense. The defense felt like if they would come together at the right time, people would start talking about them, and now we are. Time for one more thing before we go. This is really cool. Sarah Thomas will make history as the first woman to officiate in Super Bowl. She will be the down judge for the Super Bowl this season. Shout out to Sarah and shout out to the NFL for making this happen. Mina, what do you think?
I love it. Making history. It's awesome. Makes me all the more excited to watch the game. It's incredible to see her pioneer yet again, being a pioneer. And I got nothing but applause for her.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's a great job by the NFL. Honestly, I think of my daughter, Lennon, who's 5 years old, who loves sports. Could be her one day. I think it's amazing.
That would be, hey, she'd be a great official. She'd be like real hard
Lennon
on everybody.
Lennon would hit somebody.
We'll see you tomorrow
Lennon
on NFL Live.
Lennon would definitely hit somebody.